I'd say it's more about investing into the future, into the unknown, really. I would first argue that open source projects, in terms of anything that's widely used, are more secure. And I think a lot of companies like to claim that they're an open source company, but they're really not helping the community. Well, I went into the Marine Corps as a combat engineer, which has nothing to do with IT. It's finding bombs and building things. I love technology and I love cutting edge.
I'm Rachel Coble.
And I'm Liz Dean.
Welcome to Mock It. This podcast interviews industry experts from AI innovators to UX architects to nonprofit leaders and lots of people in between.
We explore the back of the napkin ideas that impact the nation so you don't have to dig for the discoveries yourself. Enjoy and don't forget to like and subscribe.
Hey, welcome to Mock It. This week we have Johnny Bowder, who is a principal software engineer at MetroStar. He works in the research and development group here, and he is really cool. He has some really cool hobbies that we talk about at the end of the episode, but we really dive into research and development and a lot of open source things, and it was a really fun conversation.
Yeah, we got to nerd out a bit. Don't worry, Taylor Swift did come up.
Always.
So we hope you join us for our episode, and don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow us on our socials at metrostar.com.
I'll start with an easy one. Good. So in your own words, can you describe what research and development is? Because everyone says something a little different.
Well, to me, I think it's really getting paid to do cool shit. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. Getting paid to do cool stuff.
No, you can say that word. Okay. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, I love technology and I love cutting edge. You know, I've been that way, I'd say, for a while now. So for me, it's like that. It's maybe not necessarily always the case. But from a company perspective, though, I'd say it's more about investing into the future, into the unknown, really. And a lot of that is to do with, you know, a lot of these R&D projects, you're kind of doing new things. And so there's no guarantee that you're going to, you know, it's going to work or you're going to get it right. So a lot of it really is about, you know, like I said, unknowns. A lot of times when it comes to these projects, they require a lot more of a deep dive on things, require a lot of more, I would say, really smart people. Luckily for me, I'm on a team like that. I'm not sure how I got in there, but
everyone on this podcast always calls themselves dumb and then they keep talking totally, and I'm like, totally. You're smarter than me. So.
But yeah, so I mean, I just say, you know, those are the big things, deep dives, smart people, experimentation.
So for R&D, is it usually associated with a contract that the company is working towards, or is it outside of contracts that the company is just using to grow their sort of technology and offerings?
I would say generally it's not contract specific, because a lot of, you know, in my experience, aside from, you know, like the big ones like DARPA, right? Like that's all they do is like research and development. But in general, most contracts I think are a little bit more prescriptive. It's like the government thinks they know what they want and they say, we want this, this, and this, and then you deliver, right? Or you don't. usually there's not a lot of gray area. And, you know, I think to be true R&D, you really need flexibility. And I think that's where a lot of the, you know, private sector comes in. I think there's a lot more risk that comes with it, but I think also a lot more reward that comes with it as well.
How do you feel that sometimes when you're in research development, like you've been working on something for so long and then it just doesn't work out? I feel like I could never be on an R&D team because I would just be so sad if my, I don't want to call it a hypothesis. Is that what you guys call it, an R&D? Like, I would be so sad if what I imagined something to be just couldn't come out. Like, how do you process that when something doesn't work out the way you kind of initially wanted it to?
And how do you know when to stop? Like how do you hit that point, that, like, heartbreaking point?
Well,
no softball
Metro
question.
Metro Star never stops.
No, I actually don't have a lot of comment based on experience for that, because
she's so good.
Yeah.
Well, so in batting 100. The group, you know, so I'm with the client solutions group that we do a lot of R&D. Most of the bits of work we've worked on have been very targeted. So usually, you know, these projects we build have a specific use case, and a lot of times we have a specific customer in mind. So, and the way that we tend to go about it as well is that we'll basically build these things to a certain point, and we just kind of stop at that point, right? So like, we're not continuously adding on to it. It's not like an endless thing, and then people are like running low because nobody wants to, you know, buy in. So I think that tends to work out pretty well. Now, with that said, there are some things that we started work on, I'd say somewhere around a year ago. There are some things we haven't got any bites on yet, which maybe that's maybe a little upsetting, but yeah.
At any given time, how many projects or R&D initiatives? Oh, geez. Like.
You know, you'd think I would have came prepared with a number. So I would say, there's quite a few people on our team. We're not all always working on the same ones. Usually a couple of us are working on a couple of different projects, a couple of us working on a few others. So I'd say for me, usually like I've probably got about 4, 5, or 6 going on at once. Not all, you know, necessarily active, just like focus on this one this day, focus on this the other day. But I'd say as a team, I don't know, 10-ish, you know, and that's like R&D and then also potential like project support and some other things. But in general, yeah, 10 or so, I'd say things going on at once. It's a lot.
How do you decide which ones to take on or not take on? Is there a threshold of let's go with this or not go with this, or this is like too pie in the sky, or this is being done by another org? Or
yeah, I mean, all those things play in, right? So like if there's some potential opportunity maybe that we're targeting, then, you know, those sort of things tend to get priority. A lot of times we'll want to specifically show things to specific people. And if things are lining up there, then, you know, we will, you know, try to ramp that part of it up and get stuff done. But yeah, it really just depends on what's going on. And a lot of times somebody from, you know, MetroStar leadership will come in and say, hey, I have this idea. And the next thing you know, we're working on that. So it's crazy, but it works.
What has been your favorite one to work on so far?
Probably the first one I would say we worked on. So, one of the first things we worked on was when I joined the team. It was like right around when all this ChatGPT, large language model, LLM stuff really popped up. And so it was the first big, like I'd say, R&D project I was involved in. And it was around all this, like I'm not a data scientist. And so I had to kind of take a deep dive into all that. And because it's kind of really, as part of me on the project, it's become a lot of my responsibility as a front end guy to take what, you know, the data scientists and engineers are putting together and making it into a way that people can understand, like, you know, more people like me, right? Just like, I don't understand that stuff. So how do I make it adjustable for the regular user? What that ended up doing, again, timing ended up working out really well. This was like right after we got Comet pretty much up and running and released. And so that was the first project where I got to use Comet, like in a real world scenario, to build out the front end for that. So it's making use of our like starter application, a lot of the components. And then it also was a good way to find out where we were lacking in a few areas. You know, there was some stuff that I had to kind of come in afterwards and fill in. But definitely that.
Can you explain what Comet is to our listeners?
Sure. Glad you asked.
That was a great follow-up question.
So Comet is my other baby, aside from my daughter. So Comet is really, I was explaining it as our accelerator for building government web apps. So it's everything from a component library to starter applications and everything that really goes into that. So from the component level, since we do a lot of government work, a lot of times that means US Web Design System. And kind of to take a step back on that, we kind of built Comet over a couple of iterations, and it really came out of tech challenges that we were working on, and a lot of them were the same, right? So they're build this application, use Web Design System, make it do these things, and it's just kind of a repeatable thing. So instead of taking all this, you know, Web Design System, for anybody that's aware, is basically just templated code, but it's not really very smart. it's just, you know, I want to say it's not smart, but it's just, it's very very, I don't know, it's just templated, right, to make it flexible to everybody. So we built it in, we took them all, made them everything React components to make them a little bit more streamlined and flexible from our perspective. And so that's where we started. Then we kind of started building some starter applications because, again, a lot of these tech challenges and projects have the same requirements. And then we kind of got it to a point where, again, we've used it on a few things. And then in addition to kind of it just being a starter, we also built in a lot of just really the baseline stuff that every project needs. So like authentication, state management, we put a lot of effort into ensuring really high code quality. So there's a lot of code coverage. There's like unit testing, end-to-end testing, accessibility testing, security testing, like all the testing. And that's all, again, so these are just things that as a developer, every developer pretty much knows how to do, but it's just something you do over and over again. And so it's maybe fun the first time, but after
tedious.
That it's repetitive.
Yeah.
And so that kind of brings me to kind of my other area. So so I do a lot of front end. I focus heavily on open source. And then also kind of the other thing is what's described as developer experience. And so that's like, best way to describe that to me is, I'm sorry, this is a long answer.
No, it's okay. It's good.
The tools and the environment and the culture that developers live every day. And there's a lot that can be done to simplify all that and really make, you know, us developers more productive and, you know, we're happy when we're productive. So that's exactly what Comet is. It's all the tedious stuff is done. You just go. The instructions are super easy. Pull it down, start it up. It just works. And so that's really the goal for Comet. And again, we've used it on multiple projects. Again, the one project was really fun. Good learning experience. Used it on a few since then. Just continue to improve. You know, it's continuous learning. And
it's open source, right?
Yes.
So what does that mean for someone who's listening? Not only what open source is, but if Comet is open source, what does that mean for somebody who's interested in Comet?
A lot of things.
So that was like six questions. Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's how I always phrase questions. So the big ones are, you know, anything that's open source is going to be much more transparent. That's probably the biggest thing in my opinion. So for anybody that wants to potentially use your tool, they can, one, see that it's, you know, at a glance, kind of get an idea what it's about. You can also go in and, you know, if you really want to, go and dig deeply into the code and figure out how things are working. And then you can also kind of just see kind of like what's the community around it. You know, is it being kept up to date? Are there security issues? So transparency is a big one. The other thing for government particularly, but pretty much everybody, is it also generally means it's free. You know, there are different licenses and things that go along with that, but when it comes to the projects we're working on or projects that, you know, maybe other companies are working on or just contract work, again, it's free. You don't have to go buy this tool. You don't have to deal with licensing. You don't have to deal with contract stuff and agreements. So it's just much more simplified from that perspective. And then the other one is that if it doesn't do what you want, then you can contribute back and make a change. You know, it's not like going to Oracle or, you know, one of these big companies and saying, boy, it'd really be nice if your tool did this. Okay, well, talk to you in 2 years when that thing's been implemented, right?
Do you ever get frustrated if somebody goes in and makes a change, though, and you're like, I don't want it to do that?
Well, so a lot of that comes down to managing the projects. So just because it's open source doesn't mean that anybody can make a change.
Okay.
So there are people that maintain the projects. So Comet, we have a couple of repos, projects that I and a few others maintain. So people can go in and, you know, copy the code, propose a change, but it's upon us to accept those changes.
Okay. That makes way more sense.
Yeah.
So then like Drupal is a very common open source content management system that a lot of people use.
Especially in government.
Yes.
Thank you, Obama. Yeah.
So then how does something like Drupal play into something with Comet? And like, do they play nicely together? Are they, how does it work with other open source entities that are very popular within the government?
So Comet is kind of, we built it to be, I'd say, modular. At kind of the higher level, it is multiple projects. So you have the component library, but then you also have a couple starter applications. You have a front-end starter application and a back-end starter application. They're all built to work together, but you don't need to use them all together either. So as a Drupal, for instance, so we built, the components themselves are currently built with React in mind. Okay. They could be pretty easily converted to something else if needed. If I'm not super familiar with Drupal, but I would assume, I believe Drupal can be used headless, right?
Yep.
So you could use the back end of Drupal and then you could use the front end completely out with React, and you could use the starter application, or you could literally just embed the components in your Drupal front end, I think, as well.
And for a very, very, very high level, what headless means, it basically...
Oh, thank God you're going to explain.
I was like, what? you can swap UIs out. The user interface. Mm-hmm. So if you want something to... Basically, like, to the modular point, you can pick and choose how you make things look. So with Drupal, now that it's... I don't know how they came up with this term, but it... you used to have to use Drupal 100% front end, back end, and then like build it.
Kind of pick and choose.
Exactly.
Things.
And so you can choose.
Like a pick
and mix. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of, I would say, frameworks or libraries or, you know, CMS, content management systems, and things like that.
All that.
I really went that direction. And it's for a lot of reasons. Like, one, it gives you more flexibility. Two, the general movement from like everything in one place to like microservice infrastructure and stuff really kind of pushed away from that. So a lot of people, you know, want to separate it out. You want to have a separate front end, a separate back end. But then you do have like Drupal, for instance, is like the best, like, in terms of, I don't know, between that and WordPress, I guess it's probably a fight over that, but they have a lot of really great back-end functionality, right? And to build all that would take a long time. And so a lot of people kind of go that route where they use it for the back-end and then just build your own front-end. Yep.
To go back to when you were saying that it's free for a lot of these tools, what's the business case to create? Like, why would MetroStar build something that other people can basically use for free? Why should government be like, yeah, open source?
Yeah. So I don't know. There's a lot of reasons. I would say, in terms of like the downside first, is that, you know, it does basically project to your competition, you know, what you've done and maybe where you're at, and they could even go and use it, right? So we've talked about that where, you know, again, one of our big use cases is using it for tech challenges. Well, again, other companies could also use it for tech challenges. But to us, we would love that if other people did, because then somebody's going to be submitting their code.
Even if they win, they use your
with
thing.
Our stuff in it. So that, you know, opens up visibility regardless, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like a weird one. But the other thing is that I would say it's just where the industry is. You know, the general culture of people in the open source community, I'd say, tends to be a little more forward-leaning, bleeding edge. So, you know, if you want to have the best talent come work on your projects, it's just kind of a culture you have to embrace. So that's one.
What about security? Like, would, if something happened with Comet, would MetroStar get blamed, or would Drupal get blamed if, you know, there's some sort of security issue?
Causes an international crisis.
Yeah.
So as an open source project, you know, we're making use of a lot of other open source tools, right? So open source libraries and packages. So it is absolutely upon the maintainers to make sure they're keeping an eye on that and maintaining and keeping it secure. you know, there are vulnerabilities that come out every day for different frameworks and libraries and tools. But for us, well, so the one thing is I would first argue that open source projects, in terms of anything that's widely used, are more secure. So if you are building an application and you want to make use of open source tools, if you're using something that hasn't been touched for 5 years, it's probably a good idea that you shouldn't be using that, right? But if you're looking and you're seeing that this project is getting, you know, commits or contributions regularly, even if it's maybe not for a couple of months, it's not a big deal. So, you know, a lot of it comes down to picking the right projects. For us, you know, again, since it's a MetroStar project, you know, tool solution, it's upon us to make sure that, again, we're keeping things secure. So we make use of a lot of automated tools to scan all the code and scan the packages. That stuff is, again, fully automated. So anytime something comes up, then, you know, somebody like myself or one of the others will just go and fix the issue. So that's usually just comes down to updating a package to like the newest version. Or if it's something that,
you know, it ruins your day.
Yeah. Or, you know, it could be that we're using something, maybe we're using an open source project that's not, that's maintained, but maybe a little slow, then we could just as easily go and contribute to that and fix the issue ourselves. Right. So it's, to answer your question, I generally argue that if you're doing it right, open source projects tend to be more secure. And as a company, it's upon the maintainer of that company to just do a good job, be a good steward of the, you know, with the community.
No pressure. And,
yeah, keep it secure. I literally fixed some bugs, some security fixes today, actually.
Nice. Do you prefer open source R&D projects compared to non-open source R&D projects? Do you feel like you're giving something back a little bit more?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, you know, there's the use of open source and then there's the giving back part.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of companies like to claim that they're an open source company, but they're really not helping the community, right? They're just using them, which is fine, right? It's good. It's what it's there for. But, you know, we, as a company, MetroStar, we have our own projects, but we also do support some other major projects. Like Jupyter Hub is one that we've contributed to, which is, you know, big tool used for data science. Another one called Nabari, which is also a data science related tool
that we make use of.
So we're working with them really heavily on some UI related work. Not specifically me, but I am involved in that quite a bit.
Oh no, it's okay.
I was just gonna say, you haven't always been involved in R&D.
Nope.
You started at MetroStar a long time ago.
I did, yes.
But you didn't start in R&D.
Correct.
What made you want to start going towards the R&D route?
Whew, it's a long story there. I guess
Sparks Note version.
Yeah, maybe I'll just tell you a little about my history. Straight out of high school, I went into the Marine Corps. I was a combat engineer, which has nothing to do with IT. It's finding bombs and building things. So
terrifying.
Yeah, yes, that's very intense.
Very little.
Thank you for doing that.
No problem.
Couldn't it be me?
But, you know, my plan all along was to join the military, do 4 years, and go to college. So as I was working to get, transition out of the Marine Corps, just trying to figure out what I wanted to do, I realized that I love computers. And then in high school, I was really, really interested in engineering. And so I was like, oh, computers, engineering, I'll go to school for computer engineering. It's literally what I did.
That makes sense. Yeah.
This is me, very, very black and white.
But that sounds like a computer engineer, though.
Yes. So started going to school at George Mason for computer engineering. Within the first year, I had a programming class and I had an engineering class. Hated the engineering class, loved the programming class. And it was like my first experience programming and didn't know what I was doing. You know, like I was way behind. A lot of the kids have been doing programming in college or high school. And I was like 4 years behind, right? Because I was in the military and a lot changes in 4 years. But I loved it either way. So I switched to computer science. Within my first year, met MetroStar at a job fair. really want to get into that too much, but after after talking to like 15 other companies who completely blew me off, you know, because I had really no IT experience, talked to Metrostar again on my way out, and they gave me an opportunity, you know, really took a chance on me, so I appreciate that. Started working on a Marine Corps project where I was doing more like help desk.
Well, that makes sense though.
Yeah.
You understood the mission.
Yeah, started doing that. Was going to school for programming, so it was kind of always my plan to start doing more and more of that as it became available. And just, you know, worked my way up through. So did some engineering, back end engineering stuff, did some programming work. And on that project, we used a lot of SharePoint. So everybody knows SharePoint, right? So I loved SharePoint. Loved it. I was that was my thing. Like, I wanted to be the SharePoint guy. I literally followed people, like, online. There were a couple big names back in the day. And I was like, I want to be that guy.
Micro-influencers.
Yeah, I want to be that guy back in the day. And I did it for, like, probably, like, 10 years, right? So I was very good at it. But I also kind of worked through a couple of projects. The industry was changing. Things were going more towards open source, front-end oriented programming, and SharePoint's more like Drupal, right? Like without like actual, but not really easy to separate. Yeah. Realized I was kind of stuck, right? I was like in a project and the project itself didn't want to go, they just didn't want to change. They were good with what they had. And so I just took it upon myself to start just learning. And so I started listening to a whole bunch of podcasts, started reading a whole lot of blogs, got a couple of certifications.
Did you do Metrostar University?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Love that.
Yep. Got a couple certifications. And I actually also had a very good manager at the time who recognized that, you know, like she was listening to all I was saying. So Ashley Brush.
Of course, all you had to say was that.
Yeah, yeah. So she was my manager at the time, and I remember we went to lunch one day and we just talked about it, and she was like, yeah, so basically made it happen. I got to go work on a much more modern project with USCIS. In my opinion, one of the most forward-leaning government organizations you can work for in terms of IT. Big open source.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So, you know, different kind of mission. Like I said before, it was like DOD, some Intel stuff, and was just like thrown into it, right? So I thought I was ready. I was not ready. A couple of podcasts don't put you, you know, where you need to be. So, you know, trial by fire, got thrown into it and, you know, persevered. We did well, and I've just kind of been doing it ever since.
What, if you don't mind me asking, what certifications did you get? What I'm really trying to get at is, so if someone wants to get into R&D, mm-hmm. What advice would you have for them?
I actually have a couple. I actually feel like I didn't fully answer your question though. So let me.
Oh, oh my gosh.
Let me
I'm
finish
sorry.
My story. I'm sorry. It's a very long story.
No, it's.
I love a good long story.
So yeah, so I worked on a few projects and then, ended up on another project where I wasn't really very happy, right? So it was just,
government. That happens in government a lot.
Some projects are good, some projects aren't.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't really any good projects that I could go to. And, you know, people don't communicate as well as they should. I ended up leaving Metrostar for a couple months.
I know, yeah, the tea. Know yes. But you came and helped with something while you were gone, though, didn't you? Like a marine thing? You got to cut a cake.
Oh yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I did.
I was like,
we didn't keep you too far.
I was like, he's gonna come
the
back.
Marine birthday, yeah, with my sword.
Yeah,
but yeah, so went away, experienced the private industry for a little bit, goods and bads. They got downsized. Luckily for me, Metrostar welcomed me back, and I was given the opportunity at that point to join our CSG team, which is the R&D team. So, sorry, I had to get back to that.
Yeah, no, thanks for finishing the story full circle. So
I wasn't really doing R&D until that point. And I've been on the team about a year at this point. And it's just a big part of what we do as a team. So that's how I got into it. And then in terms of certifications. Historically was a big, I would just say Microsoft guy, right? So all the SharePoint stuff really geared me towards Microsoft. So I'd gotten quite a few Azure cloud certifications done. From there, I ended up getting, I went to the AWS and got their software developer associate certification. And that one was huge. So the Azure one was great because at the end of the day, you know, a cloud's a cloud and they kind of all do the same thing, but they all have like their own terminology. They all have their own like things that they want you to use. And so they are also very different. So I would say any sort of cloud certification, if you're a developer, something that's developer oriented is great. But I would also say if you've never done one of those certifications before, I'd recommend one of the foundational certs first, just because they're quicker and easier, because they're not easy, the tests. Like, they just ask you these obscure questions, and yeah, you really have to know it to do it well. Ugh. So those are good. The other one that I had looked into, because I was really kind of going down like a DevOps path for a while, was I was going to get a Kubernetes certification.
Oh.
So anything like, you know, microservices, anything Kubernetes is just, it's everywhere now. So if you have a good understanding of what goes into that, it's going to set you up for a lot of things. So you understand containers, you understand like orchestration, there's networking that goes into it. Oh,
there's so much.
Wow. Yeah, a lot.
If you're not geared towards being like a developer or DevSecOps, something like that, yeah, like how would I, is, are there other more maybe mainstream opportunities available in R&D?
Within R&D? Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're not all developers on the team. I would say
there's
that,
hope for us.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think probably both you guys might fit this a bit, but I'm not sure. But design, you know, we have a lot of great designers on our team.
I'm a stick figure person. No?
Okay. Yeah, me too. But you know, MetroStar is big on human-centered design.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So everything that we build is with that in mind. So design support is a big one within our R&D team. You don't really have to be a developer to be like a data scientist either, you know, or maybe just to get to that point, maybe a data analyst. So anything in the data science, machine learning perspective, and then even as, so that all that needs to be supported by some infrastructure as well. So you don't have to be a developer to be a cloud engineer or a DevOps engineer, right? So there's plenty of avenues.
And then you have to market what they make out there.
Yeah, exactly. So business development is definitely very important. Yeah, marketing for sure.
But do you need a project manager to help organize?
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
Liz, are you trying to get a different job at MetroStar?
No, I like my boss too much.
No, I will say though that if there's one struggle, it is just for teams trying to do R&D that are trying to do more than one thing at once, you really need people that can self-organize, because there's just not, you know, there's not enough project management to go around, at least to keep the team lean and all that, you know, you just have to be able to figure things out on your own. And
you have leaders on the team though, right? Like kind of people who are kind of leading.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so like, you know, we have a couple like directors that are leaders. But at the end of the day, again, a lot of it is we're really on our own to get it done. We'll have check-ins and stuff, but you know.
Do you have a team?
We don't really have a team.
The CSG. Yeah, the group
we are like a group of different roles, and then you kind of fill in where you're needed.
Oh, very nimble.
Yes, yes, yes.
Love that. I like that word.
Did you do any R&D when you were in private?
No.
No? Not really. Okay. I was going to ask what the big differences were, but.
No, I mean, I would say, you know, I thought a little bit about that. So you've got like government work. So you've got like government contract work, and then maybe just straight private work, right? Mm-hmm. I think if you were to look at where the real innovation tends to happen, it's straight private, right? Like look at OpenAI, right? They got a lot of funding from a lot of people, so it's a little different, but it's not government work.
There's
just
rules.
Right? Yeah. So, you know, the big, I'd say, things that have happened over the years, we're, I think, more in the private sector, you know, so like I said that before that, like I mentioned Kubernetes, that all came out of Google. You know, it was, they built that as an internal thing. At some point they open sourced it and the community took it over. So I would say in terms of differences, it just, yeah, my argument is kind of a lot of it really comes out of the private sector, the big things. Definitely a lot more risky because, again, you don't really have somebody else's money to then again, you probably do again. These people have investors, so I don't know. It's not my area. I'm not really sure.
Why would someone want to work on a small R&D group kind of like at MetroStar rather than like a Google or something like that?
Well, so I'm glad you asked that, actually, because when I did stray and took a little bit of a walkabout, I worked for a very big company and I didn't like it. You know, it was just, didn't have any sort of, the culture, the people, it wasn't like here, you know, everybody says it, right? But I literally feel like part of the family here.
Mm-hmm.
There was none of that. You know, I had no relationship with, you know, the CEO. I knew who he was, but, you know, I saw him on videos all the time. But so, you know, if you want that sort of thing, that's a big deal. And then, you know, the other thing I was going to say about R&D and MetroStar and different size companies is that kind of the fun thing that I've realized is that, at least for me, working in the CSG is kind of like working for a startup within MetroStar.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, because our CEO is going to love that you said that. I feel like he's always talking about startups and vibes.
But it's like the best of both worlds because we have kind of like MetroStar as a well-established, you know, I don't want to say big brother or whatever, but like parent company.
We've to built protect credibility.
Us. Yes, yeah. Yes. And we're protected, right? There's a lot of risk that goes on working for a startup.
That's such a vibe of MetroStar with like, you
startup
know,
Zoom culture without being toxic. Yes. AM.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, but I mean, we do, you know, we definitely put in work, right? Like there are some significant hours that can go into things and that's usually associated with startups as well. So it's definitely has some of that, but I don't think I'd say it was quite as bad either. Again, some of these people are just working all the time.
Some people, there's still balance. I believe some people just want to work all the time.
Yeah.
It's not me, but some
I'm
people.
I'm guilty of that sometimes.
Yeah, really?
That's what I'm working on. If I'm really excited, then.
That's good, though. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. When's the last time that you were working on something where you're like...
When you were a total nerd.
Yeah. Nerd out.
I mean, it's plenty. I mean, they're like, I literally need to stop though, because like I find myself sometimes at home and I'm like, there's this little thing I'm thinking about. I think I figured out a solution over the weekend. I should get on the computer and do it now that I'm thinking about it. Then I'm like, nah, maybe I should. Maybe I should go read a book.
Or you should go read the Thursday Murder Club.
Walk the dog. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, I definitely get excited about a lot of things we're currently working on. But at the end of the day, you do got to draw a line as well.
Nice. Well, I know we're getting towards the end and you're talking about being excited about your work. But since we're near the end for more funds, what makes you excited outside of work that gets you like all giddy?
Well, I love anything in, you know, involving my daughter's activities. So my daughter is a gymnast and she also does robotics.
So
that's
cool.
Did she do the robotic competitions?
Yeah. Oh, do they awesome. Fight each other? The robots?
Kind of not.
Oh, that's so cool.
I literally just went to one on Saturday. It was their first competition and it's her first middle school competition. So she was doing an elementary school, but elementary school is just Legos. Middle school, it's like real. So they're building these things.
Nice.
And so it was a very different experience. So we did that and, you know, just watching like these 11, 12 year olds working as a team to, you know, win and or not win, you know, and, you know, get the robot to do this thing, knock this thing over, get in the other way, the other robots. So they're not really fighting, but they definitely run into each other and get in each other's way.
At the high school level, do they fight?
No, I don't think they're supposed to. Like, they have referees.
I don't know why. I'm like, yeah. I want it to be Fight Club.
Well, yeah, because I thought it was like the thing with like the...
In movies, you see it's like they're like attacking.
Like, no. At each other.
No, there's always some specific challenge that they have to do.
We'll start the Fight Club robotics.
Yeah, it's always more about like a specific challenge. So every year they have a different challenge. So
that's
like,
really cool.
Get this thing from here to there or get your robot to do this sort of thing. So that's really fun. I always love getting involved in those sort of things. So anything to do with that. I love going outside. So hikes are always great. Great thing about Northern Virginia is that there are a lot of great wineries outside as well. So I love a good hike in a winery is kind of my perfect
like a little
day.
Nap out there.
Yeah. I also kind of have a couple of weird, I'd say, eccentric hobbies. Like I like to make cheese.
Kind of cheese?
I've made a lot of different kinds. I have a cheddar right now, but it's been aging for like over a year. I don't think it's good
anymore. Do you have a kit or you just do the science yourself or?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of something I worked on over a period of time. I have, you know, like you just buy all the bits and pieces. It's not really a kit. It's kind of homegrown kind of deal.
Do you ever make like a little charcuterie board?
Oh, that's like
I love cheese, like any kind of cheese. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah. My sister-in-law a couple Christmases ago got me a make your own blue cheese kit. So I feel like that's a very layman's version of what you're doing though.
No, blue cheese is really cool because like I kind of got into it, I think, because of the science of it. You know, there's like just the biology that goes into making cheese is really fascinating. And like blue cheese is one of the like craziest because it's literally just like filling up full of mold, like mold that you can see. But it's safe,
delicious.
Right? Yeah.
It's
nice. And I kind of came around to blue cheese because of it. But
Do you have any other niche hobbies?
So many. I love plants and gardening.
Oh my gosh. I wish our old host was here, Marie. Yeah. She has so much to say about plants.
Yeah. So I have I don't have a ton, but I probably have about 10 or 15 plants at home.
Nice.
I just got a little bonsai tree. It was what I wanted for Christmas. It's awesome.
Those are the ones you like cut with little tiny scissors, right?
Yeah.
Is there one that you could recommend for if you literally can only keep a dog and a child alive? Like a very basic.
Those seem harder than plants.
I like kill everything. I try to, besides my like actual living dependents. Like,
I think like the snake plants are like one of the easier ones. They're
pothos.
Pretty. What's that?
The pothos plants, the like green viney ones.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing I think that people tend to mess up is that most plants require a lot of sunlight and a lot of people don't have a lot of sunlight in their houses. So if you're trying to go super easy, you need to get something that doesn't require a lot of sunlight. And snake plants, like I have some in my basement and they're fine. So those are easy. And you know, watering, like some people literally just forget, which I don't understand. How do you forget to water your plants?
Very easily.
But also some people overwater, right? Like things will rot and
root rot.
Yeah, it's not a good
thing.
I've
seen that. Mm-hmm. I'm scared to look.
I didn't even know that was what it was called.
So plants. And then the other one so many. God. I love reading sci-fi. So I've been reading a ton of sci-fi books. I'm reading through the Three Body Problem books now, if you guys have heard those.
I haven't, but I'm intrigued.
The first one was so good. It's the best book I've read in years.
Oh, I think that's going to be
so good.
Bring up my Goodreads right now.
And that's coming out on Netflix in March.
Ooh.
But I'm not happy about the Netflix version so far. But
Netflix is really making me mad now.
It'll probably be excellent, but the preview doesn't make me happy.
Did you watch Dune?
No, you know, I need to, but I've never read those books either.
So I've heard the books are really hard to follow, but the movie is apparently very good. And I just went to the movies to watch Mean Girls, the musical,
weekend.
And the trailer for the second part of Dune was playing and I was getting cold chills. I was like, whoa, I need to watch this.
I need to get to that. And it's like one more I could think of is like, I love music.
That was going to be one of my questions that I had for you.
So I grew up playing saxophone, played saxophone all through school. Met my wife in band, literally at band camp. That's a true story.
But I will reframe.
Now, it was band camp on the football field. It was not like in the woods and all that stuff. But yeah, we met there. But in general, I love music. I was in a guitar band in high school.
I feel like a lot of musicians end up becoming engineers for some reason. My brother was really into music. He's an engineer.
I can see that. Yeah. There's a creativity-ness that comes to it.
Yeah.
Creativeness. But when it comes to like music, I like really, really love heavy, heavy stuff. Like going to like heavy metal concerts.
Really?
Are the best time.
Have you?
Getting in mosh pits.
You bring
best.
A little cheese to your little heavy metal.
Have you ever gone to an Offspring concert?
No, but that would be excellent.
So they're my favorite band. They are the besides Taylor Swift, which I will also bring up, my two favorite, very, very different genres, Taylor Swift and The Offspring are amazing live.
That's good to know, because like, Offspring's like just a...
You know who this is.
Pretty Fly for a White Guy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
they had so many hits.
So, yeah.
And that guy, like, I feel like when he's singing so high. Like, even the recorded stuff sounds a little rough. So, like, it makes... If he's good live, that's good to know.
Oh, he's so good. And he's very, very smart. He is a PhD, and he studied HIV. So, a very interesting guy, going back to your, like, I'm not music quite engineering, but like,
yeah, you have to be smart to be good at music. I feel like read music.
Yeah. So if they do any of their anniversary tours, I highly, highly, highly recommend. I've seen them several times.
Yeah. That's
dang,
good to
Liz,
know.
I didn't know this about you.
Yeah. Keep an eye out for that for sure. Any concert. Like I would go, like, I don't love Taylor Swift, but I also like, I do like Taylor Swift.
And does like, your 11-year-old like Taylor Swift?
She loves Taylor Swift. My wife loves Taylor Swift. And she is. She's incredible, right? It's not my general cup of music, though. But I would totally go to a Taylor Swift concert.
It was amazing.
I don't really like country, but I would go to a country concert. Concert's just fun.
Shania Twain, and she was really good. Like, for country, my wife is a very big country person. Okay. Like 90s country is like, she and her family are
the best country.
Like, very into like all types
I'm
of country.
A concert person.
Oh, I love it.
I get stressed at them.
Oh, I can
see. Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, like big crowd.
There's
like,
a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah.
I made my mom leave Ed Sheeran early. Sorry, Mom.
I heard he was cool though, like live with, he does his own, like.
A long time ago, but yeah. I mean, he was good. I'm going to two concerts with my sister this summer, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I just went to, last one I went to was Pantera, Lamb of God. It was awesome.
Was that like very heavy?
That's so awesome. Do you get into the mosh pit?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I got a little hurt at this last one. I was hurting for a couple of months. Like, my knee, I got like knocked down and like definitely messed up my knee for a little bit. But
crowd surfing.
I'm getting too old
fun.
For that, but I don't care. So much fun.
You got to keep living.
Yeah. I have crowd surfed, but not for a while. It's been quite a while since I've done that because it's hard to get up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to get my friends to throw me up there at this point.
When I was younger, I did it.
You're going to hurt your friends.
Pretty much.
Well, with that, we've learned so many fun things. Thank you so much for coming on to Mock It. It's been great to learn a little bit more about R&D and your music tastes.
You're welcome.
And open source. I feel like we could talk about open source stuff for a long time. So
need some heavy metal bands to listen to, let me know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hey, listeners, let us know if you would like his list of heavy metal bands. Cool. Well, thank you so much.